A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Smuggler's Gambit, a new Star Wars audio adventure. Written and directed by Kyle Newman. Co-written by F.J. DeSanto. And produced by the Force Cast's Jimmy Mack.
Recorded live at Star Wars Celebration 6 in Orlando.
Punch it, Joey!
Smuggler's Gambit stars David Collins as Han Solo and features the talented cast of The Clone Wars,
including Ashley Eckstein, Sam Witwer, Dee Bradley Baker, Tom Kane, Matthew Wood, Matt Lanter, Claire Grant, and Daniel Logan as Boba Fett.
Hey, who's shooting at us?
Leaving so soon, Solo?
Shields, Chewie! I said shields, Chewie!
Hear Smuggler's Gambit, a Han Solo adventure for free. And watch the behind-the-scenes video at StarWars.com/Smuggler's Gambit.
We should have left after the Death Star, huh, Furface?
That's StarWars.com/Smuggler's Gambit.
We are live. We are back. We are recording.
We are live.
This was a triumph. Hey, everybody. I'm Riley Blanton. And this is the Star Wars Report podcast that you've tuned into. Your iPod has somehow randomly shuffled and landed on this particular episode. And to which this fact, I feel like I owe you some form of thanks for tuning into this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast, episode 72, in our great journey on to episode 100, which we'll probably hit sometime next spring. I'm going to bring in the, we've only got a short amount of time. We've got a hard out in about half an hour, unfortunately, but that doesn't mean we're going to not podcast. If we have the time, we will be podcasting about Star Wars here at StarWarsReport.com. And before I bring in that mysterious voice, I'll bring in a more familiar voice, which you guys can see on the live video at youtube.com/user/RileyIsRiley. Again, reminding myself who I am, it's Bethany Blanton.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I am excited to be talking Star Wars with you.
Well, I am excited as well, Bethany. I always like sitting here, and we missed you last week. We didn't. Well, not last week. It's the week before. See, I get confused. Last week, I'll tell you who we missed last week. We missed Mr. Mark Herleman. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. You know, maybe it's not so random that iTunes picked our podcast. You never know. Hey, I'm not telling your secrets. Okay, maybe a little.
And joining us for this special episode to talk a little bit about, hopefully, who might compose the next Star Wars film. We'll get to that in a minute. It's from the Wampa's Lair podcast, Mr. Jason Hunt.
Hey, everybody. This is exciting. I get to finally come back. I normally work on Thursday nights, so this week I was not working, so very excited.
Yes, yes.
Well, from one broadcaster to another, I got to say I love your Rebel Alliance headset. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Broadcaster. I like that.
We're going to trademark.
But I'm
trademark?
A guy. What do I get to be? A girlcaster?
Well that goes back to the Wampa's Lair when they had me on. Not to throw out our sister caster out there, too.
All right, so let's jump straight into it. We've got some news to talk about. I just wanted to say Rick McCallum has retired from Lucasfilm. This official announcement was from StarWars.com. It was officially announced as to his departure. The initial news of his requirement of his retirement was actually somewhat quiet. It was briefly mentioned on the Forcecast, actually, when they had Steve Sansweet on shortly after this announcement. So I heard that, but it wasn't really official until they actually put out something official on StarWars.com. So, unfortunately, the man behind the production of all three prequel Star Wars films will not be involved in the future of Star Wars. He will be pursuing his own independent films moving forward.
Little trepidatious about that.
Yeah. I'm glad he's been able to put so much time and energy into Star Wars, and sad to see him leave.
Yes.
But
I think it's
Star Wars is moving in a new direction. The wind has changed, so to speak.
The wind has changed. I think that they're trying to really, at Lucasfilm, moving forward, I think they want a kind of clean break from most of the cast and crew, with the exception of George Lucas. I don't think we'll see many familiar faces in terms of the rest of the production, other than maybe John Williams. We'll get to that in a second. Also, there's an interview that I want to highlight. Alan Horn, who's the chairman of the Walt Disney Company. I can't read, Bethany. Bethany's tilting my laptop.
You keep sinking. We see you like this.
Yeah, you can't tilt my laptop without warning me. Bethany's so focused on the video.
The words are
like,
disappearing.
I'm just gonna, like,
so
the
are you.
See, I'm using the built-in webcam for the video and multi-shot, and Bethany's adjusting it as I move forward. I can't read. Let's see. Where was I? Okay, so Alan Horn spoke to Vulture. Of course, they were a big part of the breaking news when episode 7 was originally announced. And he spoke briefly to the blog there. And Alan Horn said, in reference to the Disney deal with Star Wars, but really I think everybody was mature about it. It's important to keep these things confidential, so people just kept their mouths shut. And in answer to the question, how many people knew about Episode 7, he said, not many. It was a very small group, probably smaller than the group than the attack, than knew about the attack on Bin Laden. So... way to go for your terrorist reference, Alan Horn.
I think that group probably was like, this is just smoke and mirrors, right? This is like Blue Harvest
like
all
as
over
few
again.
People
They're
as,
really doing this, right?
As few people knew about it as Hitler's bunker is what we're trying to say when we're getting into the grandiose.
Oh,
nine!
I'm going to run through a little bit of other Episode 7 related news before we get to our main discussion. I'm saving the best news story for last, so we're going a little out of order from our show notes, guys. But I want to say... here's an interesting little bit from Examiner.com. George Lucas, quote, doesn't have much to do in the upcoming Star Wars project. I am skeptical, but let's read this quote from Examiner.com as they talk about it. This is an article from Examiner written by Michael Santo. All right. This is a quote from George Lucas. They caught up with him somewhere. I don't see it in the article, but Examiner caught up with him, and they got this quote. In reference to how critical his role would be with Episode 7, Lucas says, so this is straight from the Lucas mouth, basically, I'm not. I don't really have much to do. If the filmmakers ask, who's this guy, I can tell them. I mean, they have 100 encyclopedias and things, but I actually know a lot. I can say this is this and that is that. So essentially, he's emphasizing that he's in a very consulting role. So I think that's definitely a product of what I'm seeing Disney and Lucasfilm moving forward, trying to project this image of Star Wars. It's an interesting thing to balance, because I do get the sense from Disney and the stuff that's come out officially that they're really trying to rebrand themselves to bring back into the fold a lot of mainstream pop culture that rejected and still rejects the prequels, which, of course, rubs me the wrong way to some degree, because I think they're fantastic. But I do get that sense that even Lucas himself is kind of distancing himself and distancing the prequels from the upcoming films.
Well, if you think about it, I'm sure that he wants to be involved to some degree. I mean, it's his creation. He likes Star Wars. He was the one who came up with it and pursued it so passionately to begin with. But he is trying to be retired, so he doesn't want to be the main face of things. And he doesn't want... this is an Examiner.com article, but imagine if you have TMZ on your tail. Or if you have someone who's like, I'm from Vulture.com, and you're like...
Yeah, that's okay. True. That's a terrible name to... I would hate to be the guy with the press badge saying, yes, I'm Rick Brokster from Vulture. My question is...
All the stars.
I'm gonna get the bones clean.
Oh, my goodness. But, all right, so I got two more stories to highlight real quick. One is Ewan McGregor. Bethany, you reminded me when you said that before I jumped to the McGregor story. There, actually, TMZ has caught up with Kathleen Kennedy. I don't know if you guys saw this. I didn't have time. I just saw it yesterday where, you know, TMZ, the second the announcement happens, they start hounding poor Peter Mayhew and, you know, every single third-rate Star Wars celebrity they can. hounding them. Will you be in the new Star Wars film? Not Jayla Guy. What's the actor who played Bail Organa in the prequels? Jimmy Smits. Even
Jimmy Smits.
They're even going after Jimmy Smits. But I will
like,
say this.
Jake Lloyd. Jake Lloyd. Are you going to play young Anakin Force Ghost in the next movies?
What do you think, Mark? That answer's a no. Okay. But they caught up with Kathleen Kennedy, and it was a non-story. That's why I didn't really throw it into the show notes. Say that 10 times real quick. Throw it into the show notes. But the reason I didn't do that was because mainly it wasn't any information. It was just like, we can't wait to see the news. The question, I don't know, I remember the question. The question was, hey, Miss Kennedy, it's great to see you. Of course, she's trying to go out to her car after she's at a grocery store or something. And he's like, Miss Kennedy, shaky camera. They're shoving it in her face and they're saying, is Jar Jar Binks going to be in the new Star Wars movie? Two things. First of all, I just want to say Jar Jar Binks is dead by that time.
Yay!
No, I refuse to accept that.
And two, she smiled in a kind of gritted teeth manner and said, I'm not commenting on any of the future Star Wars movies. And so the guy proceeded to ask a question about Lincoln, which is a film she produced that's in theaters right now. And so ended the brief and ever so typically awkward. Rude conversation from TMZ. Yes, awkward and rude. How wooed! I need a sound. I need like a soundboard of Jar Jar stuff so I can plug that in. Yeah. And last thing is we'll throw a picture in the show notes. I put it on our Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/StarWarsReport. A picture of Harrison Ford has shown up from the film that he's in, Ender's Game, which comes out next year. And so it's Harrison Ford as to what he would look like. And I'm telling you, Han Solo. I mean, if he can do Ender's Game in 2013, there's no reason he can't, in 2 years, play Han Solo. I'm telling you, man. And thus ends the main story, so we dedicate a couple minutes to the final story of the day, which is exclusive from Comic Book Resources, Star Wars Legacy Returns. Just like Shaak Ti, with her many deaths and revivals. Just like... I'm trying to think of another... Just like...
Boba Fett!
Boba Fett with his deaths and yeah, exactly. There you go. Just like Captain Jack Sparrow in At World's End when we all thought he was he's back. No.
Asteroid hit.
Yeah. Exclusive. they have a preview image where it features a young descendant of the Solo family. So I want to read this. Read this expert from Comic Book Resources. Next year, fans of the Star Wars franchise will be reading comic stories set a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away in the latest round of stories from the Dark Horse. They will be set in less of a time long ago. Who wrote this? All right, Phil Fingley. Pro tip. Like, construct commas. Commas are good. I like commas.
Commas
make
help
it readable.
Me.
I can read with okay. But the publisher
commas are helpful.
Revealed exclusively to CBR that Star Wars Legacy will return in the new year, set 100 years after the events of the original Star Wars trilogy. I feel the need to read this as old Ben.
I always wonder if that's a typo, though. Is it really going to be set before the other one?
I don't know. Let's see. The new iteration of the book will be written by Corana Bico and Gabrielle Hardman, and they're best known for their well-received run on Boom Studios' Planet of the Apes comics. Never heard of it. Dark Horse, basically, they provided the first look image by artist Dave Wilkins. So new creative team behind it, bringing to life... descendant, the rarely modestly dressed female character in Star Wars, descendant of the Solos. What do you guys think? This is the first one I'm hoping that we've got a couple minutes to discuss on. I'm sorry for running through all the others so fast, guys, but Legacy, is it's back.
I'm excited. This is cool. I mean, granted, I really question that whole 100 years versus 140 because... If it is 100 years early, that means we're not going to get the conclusion on the Mandalorian arc that was never finished. This isn't John Ostrander doing this. I'm a little concerned there, but
yeah,
any Star Wars is good Star Wars, but that has been John's baby that whole era for intents and purposes. So I'll be interested to see what this team does for sure. And the fact that we're finally, what I'm assuming is the Hape side of things, and we're going to see Alana's descendants is cool because, you know, we've already kind of seen Jaina's descendants, even though they haven't officially said it. We all know that that's her babies.
Wait, so run through it for me, Mark. What is the line of succession that your theory is? Because I've heard a number of theories bouncing around.
Well, they haven't said 100% how many generations Cade is from Luke, whether he's Luke's great-grandson or his great-great-grandson or his great-great-grandson. But you look at how old Luke and them are, obviously he's got to be the great-grandson, because otherwise you're going to have one of those kids out there having kids at a very young age. And do you really see them writing a book like that? I don't. So it's got to be great-grandson. And then to call in this one the great-granddaughter, which makes sense, you know, because that, in a sense, is what I believe her name was, Shia or Marissa. I can't, I'm trying to think of how it was spelled. The princess of Fel. Fel's daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
Legacy comic.
I've read a number of the Legacy comics, but I am excited to see it return. If they're going to bring back a comic, I would say Legacy's definitely one of the ones to bring back.
Well, the whole Mando arc with Hondo Carr, that was completely left wide open. I mean, the last we saw him was in issue 41, and he donned his Mandalorian armor back on, painted it black, and last we saw him wanting revenge, and he was going to go out, find the Mandalore, and take him out and reclaim the Mandalorian heritage and bring the Mandalorians back kind of in the fold, and they never went back. So if this series really is set 100 years into the future versus 140 like the other one, then there's still hope for even another Legacy story down the road. I mean, the potential's there. Until they wrap up that Mandalorian arc, there's a story untold.
Cool. Excellent. Excellent. Well, in that case, any comments, Bethany or Jason?
Not really.
No.
You guys don't want to know about 3PO or the Falcon or nothing?
Well, I mean, I would be interested, but honestly, the Legacy era comics is not something that's really heavily on my radar, to be perfectly honest. So,
same here. Well,
I'm much more involved. I'm much more invested in the Clone Wars TV series, so that's where a lot of my focus goes. Give me Hondo Ohnaka and Cad Bane, and I'm good.
Yeah, those are good guys. You know, for me, it got to comics after I read all the books, and I was kind of like, okay, well, I want something else. Clone Wars wasn't out, and then I started getting the comics, and I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. And then when Legacy came out, they tied in with stuff from the earlier Republic line, you know, with Asherard Het, Kruk, you know, great, awesome characters. So I'm looking forward to a lot of what's going on in this timeline. It's just, it's one of those things I wasn't expecting, man. I mean, I did the Mandalorian arc, but not this side of the Solos. That's going to be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. I like the Legacy comics, and I can't wait to hear more. All right, guys. That was the dulcet tunes of Hans Zimmer in Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, a film actually Bethany and I are in the middle of right now. We actually paused it to do the show tonight. And the reason I play that is because we're going to get to our main discussion for today's episode after the news. We've got about 15 minutes or so to talk all about who we think the next composer for Star Wars would be, assuming, with the assumption, that John Williams will not return. And my case, I make the strong case, especially after this film, it should be Hans Zimmer. But we'll get to that in just a second. The first question before we move anywhere is, what do you guys think the likelihood of actually having John Williams come back and thus rendering all this discussion absolutely fruitless?
I think that it's fairly likely. Williams is a pretty dedicated composer, and I just don't see him... I don't see him leaving Star Wars yet.
I'm going to have to agree with Bethany on this. I'm going to say he's going to be around for at least episode 7. Whether or not he's up to doing 8 or 9 due to his, you know, age at that point, remains to be seen. But I think he'll do episode 7.
Well, so he was composing for as late as War Horse, which came out just last year.
I was pulling up his IMDb. He's rumored.
Didn't that come out early this year?
Didn't
Warhorse come out early this year?
Yeah, well, let's find out.
I think so.
It says last year.
I think that was like February or March.
Negative.
I could be wrong.
Well, I believe, Jason, you're wrong.
It's
you're a failure.
It's a Christmas movie for last year.
You
so.
Will, you, yes, no. no, it came out holiday season in 2011.
Mm-hmm. He did The Adventures of Tintin, which
missed
came out
it by that much.
Yes. Well, he's the conductor for the Adventures of Tintin film. And let's see. He's done work for
great
the
soundtrack, by the way.
I waved the stick.
Basically, this subject came up on Facebook when one of our listeners asked that question, wondering when we might discuss it and what we thought. And he gave the case that John Williams will be 83 in 2015, and he would wind up being 89 in 2021, assuming there's a movie done once every 3 years. So
well, if we're going to take a Star Wars alumni in this, in Christopher Lee, who is filming, you know, who just filmed The Hobbit in his late 80s, might we say, and is still making films over in England at this time, we may see John Williams throughout this new trilogy.
That's what
80 is the new 60, apparently. So.
If you read the expanded universe, yes.
they could do like Tupac, you know, and after he passes away, like mix stuff together. Look, John Williams, after the grave, producing new Star Wars. You know, I think it makes a logic standpoint of if you give him the reins, then he could, you know, tap his own music and steal from it all day long because he wrote it all. Yeah. I mean, granted, they can do that, but it's one of those things where, I don't know. I think he'd be more willing to take and pick and choose from everything versus if someone else came in, they'd be like,
agreed.
Well, okay, I want to make
completely
sure I get that one and I want to get that one, but I don't want to take too much because this is John Williams and I don't want everyone to think I'm just John Williams 2.0, but I mean, we're Star Wars fans. We want John Williams 2.0.
Yeah, I definitely fully agree with you there, Mark, because there's a real life example of that. Kevin Kiner. He's a great composer for the Clone Wars, but he rarely uses any of the main themes. And it's a little frustrating sometimes that he doesn't delve more into the traditional Star Wars music. But I do really like him as a composer.
Well, I'm actually not the biggest fan of Kevin Kiner's work on the Clone Wars specifically, because I'm sure he's a fine composer, but I don't really particularly care for that the style that he uses. He's very heavy on brass. And very rarely takes, and this may not be him that may be people directing the show, but he very rarely uses the big sweeping music in the TV show. And this is especially a problem in the Clone Wars television show because of the way they mix the audio. And whenever you watch the show on your television or with headphones or anything, the dialogue and sound effects are always absolutely in the forefront, and they never take a moment to breathe and let the score rise and take over. So it's just the visuals and the score. And I think some of the best moments in film, especially in Star Wars films, are when that happens. I submit to you the scene in Revenge of the Sith where the Battle of the Heroes goes underway, and then it cuts away, I believe, to Yoda and the Emperor's duel. But when it cuts back, it shows the device, the piece of the building at the Mustafar mining planet that fell into the lava river. As it goes down, coming down the river into the shot, you hear the Battle of the Heroes theme when the choir come in. That's the example of what I would give. Or when Obi-Wan dies in Episode 4, A New Hope, when that exact moment where you have the dink of the violin and it goes da-da-da, and it goes to Princess Leia's theme, actually, as they escape the Death Star. Those are two examples I would give you of why the Williams music, and whenever we're talking about composers here, I think we need to frame it in what makes Star Wars music great. And I think that those moments are what are the best moments in Star Wars music.
Williams is just such a classic composer, and he's done so many amazing soundtracks, everything from Indiana Jones to Star Wars to Superman to the Harry Potter movies. Even the classic Jaws theme. But I don't think that people stop doing the work that they love just because they turn a certain age. Because again, you have Christopher Lee, for example, or you to take a composer, Beethoven. Beethoven started going deaf at the age of 26, nearly three decades later, when he composed the Ninth Symphony. The orchestra debuted this symphony in front of a massive audience, and Beethoven was so deaf at the time, this was 3 years before he died, that they had to turn him around from conducting the orchestra to see the audience, which had erupted into applause just on their feet. And Beethoven wept because he couldn't hear them before, and he couldn't hear his own music. But he realized that it brought so much joy to everyone else around him. So you don't stop doing something that brings that much passion into your life and the lives of other people just because, oh, well, it's time for me to retire right now because TikTok, TikTok.
Yeah. Now, Riley, you mentioned brass sounds. And it's funny because, like, to me, like, Starship Troopers, the Kondathu drop, when that song, and I believe it's done by Basil Poldoris, I'm probably saying his name wrong, but, man, the brass in that, when that plays, it's just one of those things that I hear that, and I'm just like, yeah, yeah. And I don't know, I think I would want somebody that can play with the brass well, you know, do something like that, you know, that score of Kondathu drop, yeah, and how it plays out, but mix yeah. it with the, you know, with the strings and stuff, because... Man, you know, you get like a soundtrack like Braveheart or something, you know, you can really play with the romance scenes. I mean, I will give, you know, John Williams undue credit on everything, but when it came to the romance stuff, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, I mean, the music didn't captivate me in the prequels so much, you know, when it came to the romance scenes. Yeah, they were whimsical and they were, you know, slow and stuff, but I don't know, it wasn't as gripping as I would like.
Well, Michael Giacchino is a fairly new, or up-and-coming, I should say, composer who he seems to use his brass fairly well. He did the new Star Trek, for instance. He did the soundtrack to the movie Up. He's done several others as well.
The Incredibles.
Yes, for one.
And I wonder if he's doing Into Darkness.
I don't know.
Trailer for that just came out yesterday, by the way.
Is that the new Star Trek?
Star Trek Into the Darkness. Into Darkness.
Okay.
Star Trek Into Darkness. Like there's no semicolon, no comma. It's Star Trek.
Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, like Trek Into Darkness. Anyway. Star Wars
in the stars.
Yeah, well,
so you're all on some Star Trek?
Yeah.
Into like the darkness or something?
Well, Michael Giacchino really has the nuance needed for what's going on screen to really pull you into the movie. He just creates that perfect little moment where you feel in touch with the character because of the music that's playing in part. But
true.
Riley, you've been advocating Hans Zimmer.
I have.
Why?
Because
he's awesome. That's why.
Because he's the best. He's the best film composer of the past 10 years in terms of filmmaking. Give me Gladiator, give me Pirates of the Caribbean, give me Inception, just to name a few.
Sherlock
These are,
Holmes.
Well, and that's not one of his better ones, but I mean...
No, but he has...
Don't knock Sherlock.
And of course the...
Nah, dark. Please don't.
He's also, of course, the Dark Knight trilogy. Man, he's doing the upcoming Superman Man of Steel movie. He did the Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which is a very beautiful score.
He's been composing
and he's been doing this since
he did the Lion King back in 1994.
Sigourney.
Well, that was of course with he's also done a lot of collaborations with a lot of people on soundtracks too, so
yes. So could we say Samurai. Zimmer like Williams?
Yeah. Mm? Yeah.
Now,
it's a possibility.
Yeah.
All the stars.
Although he's not my first choice.
What is your first choice, Jason?
Well, my first choice is one that I honestly haven't heard a lot of people say, and I haven't been paying too much attention to this topic, so I could be missing out on some of the these. But my first choice would actually be Alan Silvestri.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Pulling up IMDb right now.
He did most recently Captain America and the Avengers.
Yes, yes.
He did the score for the Polar Express, which was really, really beautiful.
Yeah, I love that.
Did Forrest Gump, and he did the Back to the Future trilogy. So
Alan Silvestri is one of those composers, since I'm a big film music buff and I love soundtracks. I know his name a lot, but I don't know his themes well. if you know what I mean.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking through his stuff, and well, he is a great composer. I mean, I really like some of the soundtracks that he's done.
Yeah.
But the sound, to me, seems a bit different than what I imagine a Star Wars film. It doesn't seem
well,
to have the same
and
feel.
Part of that, I think, is part of that, I think, is due to the tone of the movies. But I think the way that he uses the themes is very similar to the way that John Williams uses themes. You know, especially in the Back to the Future soundtrack, there's a very specific theme that gets traced all throughout the three films, which you can see evident in Star Wars all over the place. So I think the way that Silvestri uses like the various themes for the characters or whatever situation is very, very similar to the way that John Williams would use it. So if you got, you know, John Williams coaching Alan Silvestri on how to do Star Wars for the first movie or two, if John Williams doesn't do it, heaven forbid. But I think that would be really a really cool thing there. So
I'm going to take a brief listen to old Alan Silvestri in Captain America. That does, that kind of has a throne room sound to it almost. I could see that.
Oh, yes.
You know, we have discussed this at pretty great length on our Facebook page. Join the conversation there at facebook.com/Star Wars Report in case you haven't liked our page. But there we've been talking about the subject a bit on and off. And a number of people, other than Hans Zimmer and a few of the others that we've said, you know, all of these... Almost everyone wants Williams. Actually, I don't think I've seen anyone who says they would rather have someone else. But one suggestion is Howard Shore of the Lord of the Rings trilogy and others. And now I love Howard Shore, but one, I highly doubt he would actually do it.
He's kind of busy right now.
Because he's busy doing the and other things. But two, because his musical style, while I love Lord of the Rings soundtracks, it's quite different.
Well,
it doesn't have the same... I think
I can answer your conundrum, Bethany, because I think this goes to the fundamental question of, are we trying to recapture or duplicate the feel of the original trilogy or the prequel trilogy? Because those Williams had very different styles of sound. So I don't really think the new trilogy should be the same sounding. So I don't think that a new composer... certainly people will be devastated when it's announced that, unfortunately, John Williams will not be composing it, which is what I think will happen.
But they'll be okay when they say it's going to be Trevor Jones and Randy Edelman, you know, from Last of the Mohicans.
Ah, yes. Very good soundtrack. But I do think that I don't think he'll do it. But when it's announced and they announce a new composer, whoever it is, I really hope they stick with a familiar composer, somebody I'm familiar with their work and like. But also, I don't think it's the end of the world, because I think there are plenty of composers who can capture the essence of Star Wars without actually having to be too close to the original music.
Yeah, true, but you would have to have the Force theme show up.
No, you.
I mean, there's okay. So we got the Force. We've got Vader's the Imperial March.
I don't know if you'd need that though.
Well, but they played that in the prequels. I mean, I'm sure that like during the dark side moment, they'll find a way to slide that in. I mean, I that's what I think of when I think of how they need to do it. They need to just take a few little riffs in time, and kind of like how Kerner did. I mean, he hasn't done a lot of that, but he does on occasion take a little bit and lace it in there. And I think that is what they need to do.
That's a good. Yeah, I like that. And when it comes to, you guys mentioned some themes. What are some essential themes that you think should show up? You mentioned the Force theme, Jason. I think that's a given. That kind of needs to come back. The main theme, obviously. But this is where the Clone Wars suffers. If you just never hear, and I don't want to dwell on it too much, but when I was speaking earlier of the Clone Wars, I think that the Clone Wars is constantly this 9 out of 10 for me personally, where it's amazing. I thoroughly enjoy it. It captures so much of what I love about Star Wars. But it's this thing where I feel like, oh, it's so close, but where I think it's trapped by its medium and its audience to not go all the way there. And I think just on television, the fact that it's on television and produced in 22 episode seasons just makes it different than a Star Wars movie. It's just not the same thing. And so that's why it's this constant 9 out of 10. And the same thing applies for the music of the Clone Wars, where they don't have time to have a 30-second sweeping shot of establishing shot of a planet with a rising thematic, musical theme where they show it. They don't have time. They never do that in the Clone Wars. It's always jump cuts to the next scene, to the next scene, to the next scene.
There are one or two composers who have a tendency to do that, too. It's like they tease the whole theme for the entire soundtrack and movie, and then they may play it once or twice.
Yeah.
Like, play the whole theme.
You're like, I never heard that song. Where's that song? I think Transformers did that. You're like, man, this song sounds cool. And then you're like, wait, that song's not even on the soundtrack. What the heck?
Now, I'm going to real quick.
I learned I have to get scores versus soundtracks, and there was a big difference there. I was like, oh, I don't want the soundtrack at all. I want the score.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is run through, as we come to the end of the show, I want to run through a list of composers, and really quickly from this IMDb list of the top 20 most influential composers of recent times, and see if you guys recognize any names, and maybe pick out your top 3, 2, or 1 composers, and then we'll go through that to round out our final thoughts. So we've got Christopher Beck, Ramin Djawadi, Game of Thrones, David Arnold, Craig Armstrong, A.R. Rahman, Trent Reznor, some names I don't recognize, Trevor Rabin, of course, of National Treasure fame. Marco Beltrami, Steve Jablonski from the Avengers, Patrick Doyle,
Alan
Silvestri, mentioned Thomas Newman, Alexander Desplat from The King's Speech and Harry Potter, John Debney, Harry Gregson-Williams, John Powell, Michael Giacchino, Randy Newman, John Williams, of course, and at the top of the list is actually my favorite, Hans Zimmer.
That should be the top two. Should be reversed on that list. Just saying.
Most influential. John Williams, though, hasn't done a lot in the past 10 years or so, but he certainly did a lot of... He's a great, great influencer of the 1970s and 80s.
Although, how many of these people have made scores that are so recognizable as John Williams, even to this day? So.
I mean, the only one who comes close, if you just go for most recognizable, you have James Horner, which is a controversial composer in and of himself. He's actually been sued before for copying other people's music. But you have James Horner, which I think, though he's very recognizable, the Titanic theme, you have Avatar's soundtrack was very well received. What else has James Horner done? He's done a bunch of stuff. Hans Zimmer, I think, is right
Braveheart,
up.
Braveheart.
Yeah, Braveheart. Thank you. Yeah. Braveheart, Troy. So James Horner's up there. But Hans Zimmer, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean's probably in pop culture conscience today. The Pirates of the Caribbean theme and the Dark Knight theme are probably right up there. Will 10, 20 years from now, those be themes that you remember? I think so. I think so.
Well, because you have older composers like Vangelis, who did Chariots of Fire and Blade Runner, for instance.
Yeah, Chariots of Fire is still
great
really
music,
well known.
But he hasn't really done a whole lot recently. At least not anything.
Yeah.
You say Vangelis, and most people 16 and under go, huh?
Yeah. And music composers still just aren't super well known in mainstream pop culture.
Did you name off Bear McCreary?
I did not. Bear McCreary, I think, is a fantastic choice.
Yeah.
He's not worked with.
We got to throw that out there. I mean,
Bear McCreary,
Battlestar Galactica, people.
Bear McCreary has worked with half an orchestra in his home studio for far too long. That is one of the most talented, most underrated composers out there. Man, he does the score for the Walking Dead.
That's for me. It's like I have a hard time applying the music to the person. I gotta know what movie or what they've been doing.
Right.
You know, and so for me it's like I get to thinking about, okay, you know, Imperial March, the Force, the main theme, and then I think Duel of Fates, you know, when Order 66 goes down, you know, there's certain moments that those are the riffs that I think have to be, you know, like they gotta find a way to slide that in. And I don't care if it's only for like 30 seconds, but it's got to be at the prime moment, like when the dark guy comes out or whatever.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Ooh, the Vader theme. You know, I mean, that to me, I think, is what is important. I really don't care who they pick, as long as they pay attention to those details and they're able to provide. I mean, I think Star Wars itself is going to give you the best you're going to get visually. Think about episode 4. I mean, when they're in the trash compactor, they could have made that so much more intense by adding some music. What'd they do? They took the music away. Why? Because Star Wars plays itself.
Well, and I guess one thing that's needed then is what we've seen in Star Wars so far are crews of people who've worked with each other, who've started something, whether it's the original trilogy. What we've seen in Star Wars has, for the most part, always been completely set up and prepared. And now we are seeing major Star Wars in the works, not as a finished collection, or not even as something that we're looking forward to seeing in theaters, but we're seeing the inception of a whole new kind of Star Wars. So everything's kind of up in the air. And if I were a new composer, or not necessarily new, if I were a non-John Williams composing Star Wars, I would be
terrified.
Kind of, scared, definitely. Yes. And I would want the direction to know, okay, what do you want this movie to sound like? Because, you know, I don't know, does the director want to replicate the original trilogy, the prequels, a little bit of both, something entirely different? You know, you have no idea at this point what you want.
I really hope, thematically, I would love to see a Star Wars film that's much more gritty, like the original trilogy, and much more organic and not as technological. For instance, the way the first portion of The Empire Strikes Back plays on the snow planet Hoth, or the way the first part of Return of the Jedi plays on Endor, I really hope that they kind of go for that feel, and I think that feel requires a very different type of score. And I would be not at all opposed to them doing a very, very different type of music for the upcoming Star Wars films. And you know what? The reason I like Hans Zimmer is because he, like John Williams, like Howard Shore, like our greatest composers of the past couple years, understands that a great movie score is like an opera, and each character and each place has its own themes that match it, that draw from a specific emotion. So whether it's what he did with the Joker in The Dark Knight, or whether what he did with Bane's theme in The Dark Knight Rises, or what he did with the Pirates of the Caribbean film, which I think are his best scores, specifically At World's End, the love theme that he composed for that. All these different musical themes, I really think that are essential to a Star Wars film. And you want a movie with a very memorable score. A lot of people say that movie music should be blend in as part of the film. But I think the best movie soundtracks and movie scores live unto themselves in a way that they're their own character in the film. And they shouldn't just blend into the background of, oh, that was a nice score, but I would
and
never listen to it separately.
We have real-life examples of that. Anything from the Titanic
so that's
to
my final thoughts.
Star Wars.
So final thoughts, Bethany, as you're going. That was my final thoughts.
Yes, but I do think the best movies, as far as music goes, the themes are memorable. They do embellish and enhance the movie itself. They build on it. But they are unique because you remember them afterwards. You remember coming to tears when you see Gandalf charging into a bunch of orcs and you hear just a little boy's voice singing by himself as Gandalf by himself charges. And then the full choir comes in as the Riders of Rohan back Gandalf up and charge into battle. But anything from the love theme in Star Wars to the Sharks theme in Jaws, memorable music definitely has a positive effect on a movie and can have a negative effect if you're not careful.
Final thoughts, Mr. Herleman.
I want to say I'm right there with Bethany. I mean, you know, when we did Rest Thou Softly, and I was reading it, I had a hard time with it. But when I was listening back to my own reading set to the music that you had selected, when it got to Nightfall and Order 66 music came on, I knew exactly where we were at in the timeline of the movie. And, you know, I mean, it broke me, man. I was literally just sobbing as I was listening to myself reading. And I'm like, wow, what a great use of music. And that, you know, like Bethany, you said it really good. My last thing is David Hasselhoff.
There you go. All right, Jason, I'll let you round out this episode of the Star Wars Report. Your final thoughts.
I agree that a score should complement and lift up a movie. It should be a memorable thing. And John Williams has just done that so perfectly with not only Star Wars, but, you know, many, many, many other series, and will be remembered for all eternity. I think he'll still show up for at least one of the three coming forthwith. And if not, he needs to be like a supporter and help whoever's going to take his place.
A consultant,
just to get
if you will.
That John Williams. Yes, a consultant. We need another old guard consultant here. Just to get that feel, that sense of Star Wars. So it doesn't have to be the same, but it has to have the same feeling. So
absolutely. Our souls have been laid bare. You guys know us for what we truly are. We are indeed musical geeks. I love yes. soundtracks. Oh my goodness. All right, guys, we'll be back in just a second for our to stick around to find out how to get in contact with us just after this.
Okay, well, you can find us, you can email us at StarWarsReport@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/StarWarsReport. Search us up on Twitter for @StarWarsReport. Tweet us anything and we will answer. Our main website can be found, StarWarsReport.com, and you can find us on iTunes and Zune and Middle Earth Network Radio, same name. We have a mailing list. Riley, you know more about the mailing list than
yes.
I do.
I wanted to feature that because you guys should definitely sign up. I'm super thrilled with how well it's gone. Guys, definitely head over to StarWarsReport.com/mailing list and you can sign up there and you'll get weekly updates of everything that's going on at the site, roundup of the articles that we post there. And I know a lot of you guys, it's hard to keep up with and remember to visit the website to get some of the great content that we've been writing, because it's a lot more than just these podcasts. So you can sign up there and get everything once a week in your email inbox. We don't spam you, we don't send you a bunch of we don't flood your email inbox with a bunch of junk. We don't give away your email address or anything like that. We just get it all set up nicely for you. And so there you go. I think that's covered pretty much all of our contact info. Thanks for listening to episode 72 of the Star Wars Report. And you know what? I definitely want to leave us out with... We mentioned him earlier, but Bear McCreary. Fantastic guy. So I figured we would... We've actually done... This reminds me briefly, I want to let you guys know, as far as plans for the rest of the year, we got another regular episode next week, and then we got our Christmas special. I'm still trying to work together some plans for that. But also, we've got a Battlestar Galactica special of some interviews we still have from Dragon Con that I'll have to put together when I have some spare time. I'll tell you what.
Blood and Chrome.
There we go. All right, we'll see you guys next week. Episode 72 of the Star Wars Report is in the can. Thank you guys for tuning in. And remember... Many Bothans died to bring this podcast. And so it ends. Cool deal. That wasn't the song I was thinking of, but I've got the recorder still going, and so there's probably a handful of people who are still listening to the podcast version of this. I'm leaving the recorder going for just a second because I didn't get a chance to play it in the actual episode, but I want to feature this brief theme for you, Mark. I'm sure you'll probably remember this. All right, hang on. Here we go. Wait for it.
Goosebumps.
Bear McCreary, man. Hey, between The Walking Dead and Battlestar, man, it's amazing. All right, I'm going to stop the recording now. Thanks, guys, for tuning in the episode.